Welcome to The Roots of Founder. Today, I'm talking to Marybeth Alexander. She is running Knowledge Owl, a knowledge-based business. And today, she will share all her knowledge with you. This episode is sponsored by Acquire.com. More on that later. Now, let's talk about customer service, customer success, building knowledge bases, internal, external, what AI has to do with this, and what a sustainable, calm business can do for you. Here's Marybeth. Marybeth, you're the chief executive owl at Knowledge Owl. And I love this phrase. And you have a software business that helps your customers help their customers. Also love that. In the indie hacker world, indie hackers often have this love-hate relationship with customer service, or at least they start out with it because it's one of those many things that are quite overwhelming that a founder has to do yet one more thing, deal with customers. Maybe let's dive into this. What kind of tools do we have as founders, as solopreneurs, as people just starting out to make customer service a joyful and impactful part of our founder journey?
Well, I come from a support background, so I'm going to be heavily biased in this because I love helping people and I love helping customers. But as a business owner, I think it's just good business to help your customers and give them great service. So the number one thing I think I would say as like a tool is like to make it fun for yourself. And like, you know how you make it fun is like use a fun tool. Like use a tool that's fun to use, like as a founder. And there are tons of different like help desk tools out there. Like I'm a huge fan of Help Scout, right? And I like sort of the gamification of like getting through things, and they give you a little reward when you get to inbox zero. And it's just sort of a delightful product to use. So not only, you know, is it like sort of an all-in-one solution, so you can do your customer support through there, you can set up your docs through there, you can do chat on your website through there. You can have these sort of all-in-one solutions, whether it's Help Scout or Intercom or Zendesk, and then you don't have to be juggling multiple tools. And if you find one you really like, not only is it going to help you help your customers, but you're going to have another tool to say like, oh, how did they do things, right? Like, how did they build this? So like one of my early phrases I would use when building Knowledge Owl was like, what would Help Scout do? Right. So I got a lot of ideas and inspiration from my UX and my UI and like how do I deal with like GDPR, do things. There were two companies I used to look at a lot, and it was Help Scout and MailChimp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. That makes sense. Well, those definitely are players that a lot of people get inspired by. Right. Like even Intercom, I think like just even their visuals inspired a whole generation of these little chat bubble things, like the direct chat communication tools. I find this very interesting because two things. First off, it's fine to be inspired by existing tools. I think that's a message here that a lot of founders who have this kind of disruption approach to stuff may not be interested in hearing too much. But I think it's important because that's something that is proven to work with people, for people, right? There's a budget that people have to pay for stuff, and this tool gets part of that budget. That means there's something there. On the other side, what you just said was you saw this big tool, like this big suite of many tools, right? All the different things. There's a knowledge base in there. There's the chat thing. There's email marketing and whatnot. Like there's lots of stuff in Help Scout. And yet you chose to stuck to one thing with Knowledge Owl. That is also very interesting. You kept your scope creep under control. You kept your targets very aligned on building a knowledge base. Can you tell me more about the intentionality of that choice?
Sure. So way back in the day, before we were Knowledge Owl, we were a tool called Help Gizmo. And it started as an internal startup. We were attached to a larger company called, it's now called Alchemer, but it was called SurveyGizmo at the time, sort of like SurveyMonkey. It was SurveyMonkey on steroids. That's how we used to frame it. But Help Gizmo was like an internal lean startup within that company. And we envisioned it as a full service, like help desk tool, just like Zendesk or just like Help Scout. And, you know, we were going to build it the way we wanted to build it. And that never got off the ground. But I was in charge of the support team, and my support team brought it back to life and then repurposed it for documentation. And then it sort of that sparked the idea. It's like, oh, maybe we could bring this to market. And at that point in time, we were maybe using Zendesk and like the built-in Zendesk thing, but we had hired a technical writer and she was running into all these things. And she said, I want to use this for our customer-facing knowledge base. So we're like, okay, so what if we just focused on this segment of the market, right? Like just doing the knowledge base thing. Because at the end of that, when we started looking for tools to do this, there didn't seem to be a lot of other tools doing this exact thing, just doing this part. A lot of knowledge-based solutions were either like high-end help authoring documentation for like technical writers, or they were like built into an existing help desk system. So we figured we could just focus on this aspect of it, make it play well with these other tools, but just focus on doing this one thing really well. And that was sort of our scope. And we said, we're only going to do this part of things. And we did. So yeah, worked out for us.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think that is a lot of constraint that they just show in that moment, right? Because it's like you said, like these integrations with other tools, it's easy to then kind of take it and build something for yourself because that's just so much easier to maintain than an integration where you have to deal with a partner or something like that. It's nice to see you kind of staying in your lane. And I mean this in the best sense.
We did it for a long time. Yeah. But it made it easier to say like when to say yes and when to say no. So like people often are like, oh, you should build forums. And we're like, we're not a forum tool, right? That's not what we're doing. Or people would say like, can we just do like some light ticketing? And we're like, nope. And it's interesting because you think I'm just going to do this part of this, that little part of this thing. And like, how easy is this? It's so specific. And then you realize this is actually really complicated. As the more you focus on something, the more you realize how complex it could actually be. Even if you're just doing one piece of it.
Yeah. How do you deal with customer like feature requests that are in this kind of gray zone between it's kind of still knowledge base related, but it's kind of inching a little bit outside of what we want to build? Like, how do you consider these requests?
We track it. So, I mean, there's things that like over time we said, oh, okay, we're not going to do that. Like, we're never going to do that. But we still track like how often, because I think you should never say never, right? You should leave your doors open. And you talk about this sometimes in your podcast. Like, don't close doors, right? Like, leave the possibility open. You know, you might sell your business sometime, even though you might not, you think it's a forever business. You know, maybe don't create a forever free plan because it might not be wise for you to always have it be free. So like, don't say nevers, but we track everything. So, you know, and at a certain tipping point, it might be, you know, we always said like, we're not doing a chatbot. Right. And now here we are in like 2024, like maybe it makes sense for eventually for us to actually have a chatbot, even though for years we're like, we're not doing that. That's like out of scope. So I think we track things and like, I think there probably is an inflection point for certain features or functionality that we might say like, okay, this makes sense to be in this core offering because over time products evolve and like what it means to do a knowledge base and knowledge management evolves. And I think especially now, it's so hard to even envision like 2, 3, 5 years in the future, like what a knowledge base is. Will you always need a knowledge base? Absolutely. But the knowledge base just might in the future be fodder for an AI tool, right? You might just be using it to teach the knowledge base and not directly for the end users, whether they're like customers or employees.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I feel very similarly about most things that are text related, like any kind of text interface, even the browser feels like there is a change in input medium, like the ChatGPT question that you ask, the prompt, that is the new input, where before it was like a search query on Google or a particular term, like a keyword, a specific keyword, and either you found it in a knowledge base or you didn't. Now it's kind of a more nebulous thing. And I guess that also explains why a chatbot would be interesting for you to actually figure out the meaning of a request, right?
Right. Because I mean, like people are used to search, but now people aren't used to search. Like I've replaced most of my searching, my Google searching with like ChatGPT. Like I go to ChatGPT first. Like when I open a browser tab, I use my phone. That is my first thing I do. And then if I need to, I'll go to Google. But now Google is not my first line of defense for finding information.
Isn't that crazy? Like, isn't
wild,
that
right?
The last
wild.
20 years completely evaporated over this new technology? That's bizarre. Do you see this in customer expectations too? Like both in your customers and their customers? Like do they request this kind of interface or do you just think they might?
I think we're at a very like polarizing time. So we do an annual customer survey every year. And like the big thing we asked about was like, what do you think about AI? Do you want us to do like, what do you want? And it's polarizing. Like there are people who are like, I don't want to touch with a 10-foot pole. And I think that's a lot. And then there's the people who are like, give it to me. Like I want AI to help me create content. I want AI to help me with search. Like I want to augment things. I want a chatbot. I want like ChatGPT for my knowledge base. So I think there's two sides of things. I think there are people that are like us that are like just using AI all the time, but I think a lot of people still aren't and they're not used to it and they're not comfortable. So I don't think we're quite there yet. Like I think a lot of people just, they don't even have a knowledge base, right? This is like a lot of businesses. They don't have a knowledge base for their product. They don't have a knowledge base, you know, documentation for their staff members or people coming in. They don't have documentation. So they're not even to that point yet, right? They just need like having documentation would be great. So I don't think we're quite there yet where it's like pushing, but business owners like us, founders are like, I want AI, right? Like that's what's pushing it, I think, more so than other things. Like I think people are still willing to go to a knowledge base and search because most people want to self-serve. They don't want to have to contact you and they don't want to have to figure things out through trial and error and waste their own time.
I guess a chatbot is also a potential friction point for this, right?
Like well, a lot of people have had bad experience with them. So you see a chatbot, you're like, I don't want to chat. Like, this is going to be horrible.
Human. I want to talk to a representative.
Zero, it's like yelling on the phone, right? It's similar, right? And every time I pull up an intercom on a site, I'm like, are they actually using Finn? And then you see, and you're like, nope, it's pre-programmed because they have like the chatbot that is just really like a big decision tree. And you're like, nope.
That's what I've used AI, and I use the term loosely here for the first time as with Intercom back in the day, like 2017, 2018, when they had this kind of fuzzy keyword matching and then would pull articles that you had pre-written and suggest them before they actually got to the representative. That helped us massively at Feedback Panda back in the day. Like we had thousands of customers, they had the same question that would just pull up the article we would quickly write so that we wouldn't have to answer it anymore. And it was right there for them. So
yeah. And I think that type, we would call that in the support, we call that ticket deflection, right? So when you have a form, whether it's on your website, like, or in your product and someone's trying to reach out to you, it doesn't hurt to just take, like, ask them what their question is and then do a quick search and present them with a few information because you can not only give them a great experience, they're like, oh, that is exactly what I want, right? But you save yourself the time. So I'm a fan. And this, I think for anybody starting out is this concept of sort of just-in-time documentation. So whenever you do get a question from a customer and you haven't answered it before, rather than just answering that one customer and like sending them an email or sending them a chat, it's just write the quick article and then send them a link to the article. And then anybody else who has that can find that article now when it can be searched and it's there. And then you can slowly build up your knowledge base over time. And that, you know, will save you time and like make your customers happy. It's just a win-win, but it takes some discipline.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, it takes the disciplines to not just quickly answer and hope that that never happens again.
You know? Yeah, and it hurts if you like helping people and you just like interacting with people, like it just, you don't have the desire to like write it down. Like I don't have that urge. And I think something that helps a lot of founders early on is they despise doing the customer support. They do not want to get on the phone. They do not want to help people. So they're like, I'm making videos. I'm writing this down. Don't talk to me. And that actually is beneficial because it helps people, you know, build up that knowledge base. And like, incidentally, because they don't want to do customer support, they're giving a better customer experience because they have documentation.
I love that. You can leverage your own dislike of the activity to not have to do the activity as much in the future. I think that makes
your customers happy. It's like, yeah. It's strange.
It's kind of an investment into your own company too, right? If you want to look at it, if you need to convince yourself that this is a good idea after what we've already just presented as a pretty solid idea, like the creation of a video, creation of an article, or even just, you know, anything really that is something that you can link to, an artifact really, that is value that is added to the company, right? Both for the interactions with customers. And in my experience too, this is super useful if you actually want to sell the business later. Like having this codified, that's kind of, you have
this. This is like SOPs. Every business book, everybody like eMyth, yeah, you like to talk about this one, is like write down everything. Just write it down. Document it.
That's the thing. Like you have standard operating procedures. They're not just internal. They're also external. Like this is how a customer should operate in a standard fashion, right? It's really cool. And this brings me to a point that I really want to ask you about, because you probably have the data on how many people or when people start using knowledge bases for their products. And I'm thinking specifically about indie hackers, people who are just starting a business. When is a good time to start using such a product for your customer service communication? Keeping in mind that these people are still kind of trying to figure out their product and their market and their customers at the same time. So what would you suggest?
So I can say like for us, and we are a more mature knowledge-based solution. So when you're first starting out, like, you know, for new folks, I'm like, what are you using for your help desk tool? Why aren't you using the built-in one? It'll make your life easier. So like, I usually am a proponent of that when you're first starting out, but especially when you don't know exactly what you're building, like it's not always, and this is like an interesting thing to say as a documentation person, like it doesn't always make sense to write it down if it's going to change next week. So how much time are you going to spend documenting all this if it's just going to be different in a month or 2 months? So you have to like balance that. So for us, when we see like more mature people, like we just did a bunch of ICP work like you did. And like when we talk about our ideal customers, and about 50% of our customer base are other software companies and others like SaaS companies, they're more mature. right? They've been around like 5 years, right? They plus years, like they've like they're established, you know, SaaS companies, and they're like, okay, their product is mature and it's not changing as much. And right, they just need to get everything written down so that people can understand their product, because after 5 years in business, you're going to have probably a pretty complicated product that is not necessarily easy to just pick up and learn how to use. So I think that balance between like, you don't need to document everything, but the things people are asking about, you absolutely want to have them documented, because you don't want to be answering the same questions over and over again. So, and I think it's a helpful tool for you to sell things, because most people, they don't want to contact you. They don't want to spend a lot of time figuring it out. And I know everyone wants to build the tool that's just so intuitive, it doesn't need documentation, which doesn't exist, but we try. But having that little bit of documentation to like answer those questions, like even if you start out with just like 10 things in your knowledge base and just start to add to them over time, it helps build trust with your customer. It's a sales tool also. So like if people go to a site, something that will, if you have two products that are very similar and one's documented and one's not, think about this as like a developer too. If there's one API that like you'd have to like read the code to figure out how it works, and one that's actually documented, you're going to go with the one that's documented. So it's a sales tool. So like, I think thinking about it as not just a support cost and like something like you have to do that's sort of a burden, you can think of it not as also a way to deflect that customer support and give like your current customers a great experience, but it's also a way to sell new customers and help onboard people and like, you know, get them into the tool in the first place.
Can it be a marketing tool as well?
It's 1000% a marketing tool, I think. Like, so I think a lot of people will go look at a knowledge base. They're like exploring a tool. You don't necessarily want to do a demo. You don't want to get like sign up for the, you know, sign up yet and like get in the demo and then start getting like hard sells and all these emails. You just want to know if a tool is going to do what you need it to do. And oftentimes marketing websites aren't going to go into the depth. So those customers that are really looking for a tool that does X, Y, and Z often end up in your public knowledge base. And then they're there and they can search and see like, can I do the things that I look to do? And like, if they like your knowledge base, it looks good, it's a great customer experience for them, and it does the things, that might just mean like, well, maybe I'm going to try this tool. And that might get people into your funnel to start with. We see it a lot as we've been like sort of really paying attention now, like trying to figure out who our ICP is and like how do they get there. A lot of our customers, before they sign up for trials, are in our knowledge base. They're looking for things. They're seeing like they can do what they want to do. And they're also, incidentally, exploring a product at the same time because it's our knowledge base. So they're getting a sense for what it could look like for them.
That's cool. That's a nice, well, first off, good for you to actually use your own product for, you know, these purposes. Not everybody does, you know. I mean, I can understand it for like a status page. If you build
a
status
page. Can I tell you just a side note? Sure. I was trying to get some help because we were looking at OpenAI and we discovered their reCAPTCHA. I don't know if their CAPTCHAs are ridiculous. So I was going to their support and then I realized that they were using Finn, Intercom's Finn, like the AI tool, and not OpenAI for their support, which I was like, this is really interesting. So there's that.
It feels, in many ways, I can see it as a way to kind of reduce the risk of catastrophic failure, right? Like if your thing fails, then your help tool may want to be something else. I think status pages is an example here. Like you're not hosting your own status page on your status page business, because if it's down, then that will be down. I think AWS has this problem occasionally, right? That their status page is hosted on S3 sometimes. And if that's down, then you can't really see what's going on. But that's, I think it makes sense for certain services. I think for yours, it makes sense to actually use it as this tool. It's great. Thank you for explaining how this is a marketing tool. That makes absolute sense. I never thought about this before. I never thought about that people might find it. Now, I mean, I know that people
look
at it.
You can also, if it's public too, it's also indexed for like SEO-wise. So people are looking for like knowledge-based tool that does this. And I had like the best customer support call the other day because their marketing team was not upset that their knowledge base wasn't getting indexed. They were upset that it was outperforming their dub. Like people were getting to their documentation. I was like, isn't that a good thing? Isn't that good?
Yeah, I think it's a reframe that you need to do in yourself to see like this is not like the manual that nobody wants to read that comes with every piece of electronics. This is a living document that helps people do the thing they need to do, right? It's easy for like, I don't know, a dishwasher, even though it's a complicated thing. Maybe a vacuum to be easy. You press play and it starts doing the vacuum stuff, right? That's the function of a tool like this. But our software tools, the way they're integrated into more complicated workflows and they're internally structured, they are complicated things. You set this after a couple of years. Honestly, for most indie hackers, their product is probably complicated after a couple of weeks because they're just building, right? And at that point, we talked about this, it's probably a good idea to not comment everything immediately or not to document everything immediately if it's still changing. But at some point, you need to at least do bare-bone documentation for it. So it's nice to have that be really accessible. In SEO, I was just thinking about this. Do you need to write it then as you would write like an SEO optimized article?
Or I mean, how do you deal with this? It's a good idea to do that because the same things that will optimize something for like Google SEO are going to optimize it for your knowledge base generally, right? Like having keywords in your title and making sure it's in the URL and like using the words you like. I mean, it's the same concept, right? You want it to be optimized for search because that's what people are generally going to do. They're going to search for something. So it's a good habit to get into. Now, what's really interesting about software companies, and that we just discovered this doing our ICP research, because like to me it was just like, yeah, okay. So like a lot of people want a private knowledge base. They do not want their competitors seeing their documentation. They only want their paid customers to actually see how their product works and like get in behind the scenes. So, you know, for years and years, I was like, make it public. It's marketing. Like you want people to be accessible. You want people are going to Google for it. And if it's private, Google's not going to have your content index. But it is a huge concern for many software businesses, their IP, right? And, you know, being able to create a private knowledge base, like that's a big reason people come to us, right? Is because they can create that like locked down knowledge base. It's only accessible through their product. They can segment who can see what. And I didn't realize it before, like how important that was to folks, but it makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, in a world of copycats, having your
and
full manual.
And ChatGPT indexing right? All your stuff.
Honestly, I'm really, and I think we should talk about AI a little bit more because I think it's everywhere, right? It's not just a tool that people talk to get their problem solved, but I've seen like AutoGPT and these kind of independent agents that can, you effectively tell them, build me a clone of this product. And then they scrape your website. They might scrape your full knowledge base, get all the screenshots of the UI and all of that stuff, and just comprehensively build a clone of the whole thing from all the data they can ingest all by themselves. There's no person involved. I can see AI being a threat to public information, right? Like, if no control over it. That's unfortunate because I think it has so much potential in this, right?
Right. We were chatting earlier and we talked about like how you could just like write your comments. Like, here's the comments in my code. Like, and then you would give it to AI and like, write the code. Here's what I want to do. That's like, write the code for that. And I think there's this concept, and I've heard it before in the technical writer community, but it's the idea of like, documentation-driven development. So you write the documentation for how something should work. And then you give it to the developers and they build it. And now you can just write the documentation for how something should work, give it to AI, and they're going to build it for you.
Yeah, then it works. Yeah.
And I think even more so now, the private knowledge base is going to be a thing because copycats.
I
hadn't thought about this until right now. I'm like, oh my God, it's more important than ever. I think you're usually concerned about your competitors seeing what your features are and building like the similar features. But now it's more like anybody could like see what you're doing and build it.
They can quickly, I mean, at least on a product level, I don't think any software is really safe, right? Like it's to rebuild something or build something that is very similar to another thing becomes easier and easier with the advents, the progress that AI has right now. It's the tools that come out every week, there's something that does coding even better, right? It's just, that's how it works. And it's hard to build a product that cannot be cloned because building a product just gets easier. So by definition, it's just easier. But what does not get easier to clone is the business. It's understanding your ICP. It's understanding the needs of your market. So, you know, like as long as you keep this information safe, I think cloning the product, sure, you now have a competing product that has zero customers. Right? That's fine. I think that's okay. But internally, I think using a secure knowledge base is an important part. Maybe we should talk about this too, because we had this little chat about like selling business and it being useful as well for that, like having your SOPs encoded into like a knowledge base. Do you see, like among your customers, do you see that people who use this external knowledge base also use an internal knowledge base? Is that a common trend?
And that's a big thing that you can do with KnowledgeL. And this is one of the things we discovered that people want to do is they want to have one place where they have both their customer-facing documentation and their internal thing. So if an internal person's there, they're gonna like look up some documentation and they're going to get information that only they can see as like a staff member, which you can do that in something like KnowledgeL because it's, you know, we have the features and functionality to have these different levels of access and have like one source of truth versus having the internal knowledge base and the external knowledge base, which some people will still do with KnowledgeL. You can have multiple knowledge bases. So some people get really granular and even have them for different teams and departments. But sort of the holy grail is just having the one place. And then depending on who you are, you get the right information at the right time for the right person. So it's like contextual.
Yeah, I love this. Like the it feels like it's one brain, right? It's the brain that thinks and the brain that speaks. Like the externalized part and the internal part, and they're connected obviously through the knowledge storage medium that we have. That is an interesting approach. I wonder how synthesizing new knowledge will, or just finding connection between things, how that will progress over the next couple of years with like AI looking into the whole of the knowledge and not just the knowledge base itself, right, with the articles.
Because there's informal knowledge bases too. And this is where it gets complicated. When we think about doing AI, it's like, yeah, we could add all this stuff in for AI, search for your official knowledge base that you have hosted in Knowledge Owl. And that might be your internal SOPs. That could be your customer facing like product documentation. But then you have informal knowledge bases, like your entire history of all of your support conversations, your code, your company Slack, like these all, the website, these are all like different types of knowledge bases that ideally all of this content could be indexed and used and then, you know, to give you the right answer. But, you know, that's way bigger than a knowledge base. Like that's like outside the scope of like what we have envisioned doing. So, but that's what people are going to want to do. So like, who's going to be doing that?
Right? Like it's outside the scope now and it feels kind of like shifting and kind of even scary, I guess, because you don't really know, like, is this going to leak secrets out there or are there things that, you know, you don't really understand and then something is said that shouldn't be said and it's on the record because it's part of a support email, you know, like all of this is, that's quite complicated. How's your approach to this? Like how much experimentation do you do with these kind of things before they actually become part of your feature set?
Tons. Like I think we are probably more cautious than any, like our customers are very conscious about security. And this is something over time, because a lot of companies, you know, there's the people who use us for, you know, the product documentation, but there's this whole segment, including some of them that use us for their internal proprietary knowledge. And like, they are very concerned about security and they do not want things getting out. So the idea of like using third parties and like indexing content elsewhere is a scary prospect for a lot of folks. And so, you know, we are, you know, taking a very measured approach and being like, okay, for people who want to do this, how do we integrate like with OpenAI and other AI tools so that people can do this? Are there tools out there that will provide these sort of indexing of multiple places and give you the sort of enterprise like ChatGPT style search for your organization, you know, that. But again, like, can we integrate with them in a way that we are a piece of the knowledge and we can feed that knowledge in there without being responsible for, you know, all of this information? Because I think that's the other thing. We're in the business of building the knowledge-based software to create these knowledge-based websites, right? But like, we're not like search experts. Like, we're not like, you know, content retrieval experts. And there are tons of tools. And this is where like a really interesting thing that's happened in the past with AI is if you wanted like an enterprise federated search across multiple things, you were paying tens of thousands of dollars a year for these high-end tools. And like with AI now, like this is just, it's now become expected. So what happens to all those like big enterprise search tools?
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen.
I hope they have long-term contracts. I hope for them that they got their 20-year contract locked down, you know?
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, no idea what's going to happen.
It's very interesting.
That's sort of the adventure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing this develop. Building something with PodScan right now that is also kind of in the AI space, but more as a little side snack, right? Not that I offer AI, I just use it to offer the things that I do. It's nice to see these developments and to see like the foundations of these big and incumbent enterprise businesses shake a little bit, because I think that's where innovation really can do a lot. And I believe that some of them need to be shaken up a little. Let's just say this, right?
That's totally. Right. Yeah. And yeah. I think there's a lot of fear around AI. Like, what's it going to do to our business and how is it going to do that? Like, for us, like, the great thing about AI is it needs data, right? It needs a knowledge base. So, like, I think the knowledge base and like having things documented is going to be more important than ever in these like years to come. Because people just, you know, people come and they're like, yeah, I want AI. I want AI search. I want it to write my documentation. But I'm like, how is it going to write your documentation if it doesn't know? So like, you need something to feed the AI. You need to train it. And like most people's knowledge bases do not have the depth to create anything close to like a good generative AI experience. And I think that's what people, that's the expectation because they're used to ChatGPT. But the reality is most people do not have enough information to train generative AI to give, you know, a decent experience to their end users. So we're still in that like chatbot experience where it's still a lot of like decision trees and if then, and yeah, praying that they're not totally hallucinating when they're telling your customers what to do.
Yeah, that's that. I think that is a problem, right? If they are, they're actually actively lying without knowing that they're lying because they have no consciousness.
They're just very confident about it.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's what it is. Like, I honestly, like ChatGPT from the start to me felt like the world's biggest gaslighting engine. Like, you know, like it knew exactly how to make you feel like it's right, but it wasn't.
And you're like, you just changed something. Yeah. You just changed a variable name in this like code.
That's wrong. That's not right. But you just said something really interesting along the path of this the conversation that we had about integrating data or sending data somewhere. You were talking about people's need for security. I kind of want to backtrack to this a little because you on your pricing page, which I find very interesting because you effectively have one plan. You have one feature set that you sell, and then you kind of have upgrades to like a bigger SLA and a bigger compliance set and using your own certs like for SSL, all that kind of stuff. Really interesting pricing model that you got there. You have a lot of compliance stuff there, a lot of HIPAA stuff and all of that. That feels very corporate.
It is.
I mean, this in the best sense. Like when did you start getting into compliance? Like when did this matter to you as a business?
Very early on. Mm-hmm. Like this okay. is, and this was the surprising thing. So the pricing model was as much for like our ease too. So like, as like when we started, it was just two of us, you know, built and for many years. And we're still, Pete and I, the co-founders, we're the only employees. We're employee owners and everybody else who works with us is a contractor. We have about 10 people total. But very early on, we're like, do we want to do the plan levels and like have feature gating? And we're like, that seems complicated. Let's just give it to everyone. And then we'll just price based on like how many knowledge bases and authors people have. And we've been doing it like that way. We originally had packages, but again, the packages were not features. They were just like, how many authors and knowledge bases do we get? And then we're like, people wanted different numbers. And we're like, whatever, we'll just do everything a la carte. Right. We started doing that, I think, in 2016, 2017. And we've just been doing that ever since. But it was as much for us to make it easy for us. So we can just focus on like building the product for people and like, you know, building functionality and doing this without having to worry about feature gating, which gets really complicated. And it seems like something that sales and marketing do, which is like, okay, we don't care about that. We just want to give people the tools that we build. And I fully realized as a founder that we are probably leaving a lot of money on the table by not having this and not charging a lot more for single sign-on and charging a lot more for private knowledge bases. But it made it a lot easier for us to like build the business. And, you know, for our customers, we think it's a great experience. So the only thing that we start charging extra for is when people are like, okay, this is all great, but I need you to sign this custom contract, or we need you to indemnify us, which we wouldn't do for years because we didn't have IP insurance, right? And all these things that, you know, we want a security review. So very early on, and I think this is the nature of the type of businesses who want a dedicated knowledge-based solution, they're looking for it and they're concerned about the privacy there. So they are going to want to like look into the business and like audit them and do vendor security reviews and such things. So very early on, those businesses like started pushing us, and we used to just do it for free and be like, sure, okay. like, you know, custom contracts and all this. And finally, like there was a customer, and I think I've heard this from other founders too, that was like, basically, like, we need you to charge us more money. Like, we're not going to be able to sell this internally unless we have like a higher level package. So that's how we first like became like, okay, maybe we do need like an enterprise package. And, you know, realizing that they're, you know, our functionality, our software product was attractive to seeing these larger organizations. But like, in order to actually sell to them, we needed it to be more expensive, even though they'll get the exact same features in a lower level. But other things that they needed, custom terms are a big one, the vendor security things, you know, the HIPAA compliance and a BAA, like those things are now DPAs, right? Like people want custom DPAs and that goes back and forth. You know, that is something people are willing to pay for. And, you know, we had the choice. We could just say like, no, we're not going to do those things and say no to those customers, or we could, you know, say yes to those customers. But that was the question, is are we going to charge for it or not? So we decided like to charge for it because people wanted to. And I think that came the customer service thing. Like these people wanted to use our product, right? These people, these companies and these individuals were like, we really need this, but like, we need you to do this thing. So in order to make that work, we created these other they were originally just plan levels, right? So, but it wasn't really features. So that's why we just recently sort of revamped the pricing page to really present it as one plan. And then those other services are add-ons for the businesses that need them.
That's a very, very interesting approach. It sounds like you're okay with doing this kind of work because it pays for itself, right? It kind of has the feeling of there.
Right. Like, it does. It's a lot because, you know, we're founders. We're not lawyers, right? We're not used to doing this thing. But I guess you have to wear all these, you wear all these different hats as a founder. And one of the things you end up doing is compliance and, you know, contract reviews. And you figure out what you're able to live with and what helps you, like, what you can sleep with at night. So,
yeah. Well, I guess that's what it is, right? You make a choice. And I think that also impacts like where this business goes, because you might just as well have stayed with all the small customers that, you know, don't need these kind of requirements and just go broad, try to serve as many as them as you can. But now you're getting into a level that maybe requires more handholding, but also has bigger, you know, bigger checks that are written, like bigger, maybe more secure connections like over time as well. Is this an intentional choice? Are you kind of moving up market very slowly? Is that where it
No, goes? I think we really recently tried to not move up market. We've discussed even removing the enterprise from the website at some points. But I can tell you, so like of our like legacy customers, like our first like 150, 160 customers, so we have like 450 customers. So like 150 or 180 of them are what we consider legacy. Like they signed up with us before like 2017 and we've never raised our prices on them, right? They pay us, those 170, about the same amount as our like 20 enterprise customers, right? So that's sort of like the balance. And we don't want to get to the point where those enterprise customers have so much weight that like we feel like we have to do what they tell us to do. Like every feature request is like, you know, needs to be them. And we don't want to be in the position where if we lose one of those enterprise customers, it really hurts us in terms of cash flow. So what we'd really love to do is just grow that base of like our, you know, monthly, what we call them like DIY customers. They like come to Knowledge L, they look at us, they sign up. They never like, they'll never even talk to us. They just use it because it's documented. They can use the tool. They can use the API. They don't need to have a conversation. And like, I think that's the dream, is to have like enough money from those like monthly DIY customers that you're just covering your expenses. And then those enterprise customers are sort of like icing on the cake. And that we're doing it because they want to use Knowledge L, right? And like, in order to use it, they need these extra things. We're not quite there yet. We're not there where that, you know, those smaller customers do cover our expenses. Like we do need those like 20 enterprise customers. They do like make a big impact. But yeah, I think it's a risk, and it's a risk I don't like. And I think we could make the decision as a business to just go after them, and we could probably make a ton of money, but it would substantially change our business model and like how we run our business and like who we cater towards. And like, while we give everyone great customer service, but like this idea that we're like only building it for this small group of people and like, you know, needing more customer success and needing more salespeople and doing all that, that's not the stuff that we like and enjoy. Like we like helping the small, you know, software companies, like, and the, you know, the individual like tech writer team of one, like help build their knowledge base and run their website. So yeah, I think and that never say never, like we might end up going up market, but right now we're intentionally trying to like focus down and like get more of those like DIY monthly customers.
Really cool. Thank you for sharing your thought process on this. I find a lot of stuff that I can relate to in here, like not wanting to just overdo it in one direction, generally a good idea, just, you know, like covering your bases, and the fact that you don't want whales. You don't want whale customers because they all of a sudden...
we're not calling them whales. We were trying to figure out what to call them because we like animals. Obviously, we're Knowledge L, but we're like, they're not whales. Are they big fish? Are they manatees? Like we've been trying to name this group of customers. We don't know yet. So if anyone has any ideas for what to call these customers, they're not quite whales, but they're
if you want to stay with like the bird theme, you need a really fluffy, fat bird that just like wobbles around.
Like ostrich?
Cockapoos? Yeah, maybe cockapoos, right? Those things that they're just like, you know, like these parrot-like things that don't even have any natural predators because they grew up someplace. Yeah, ostriches maybe, head in the sand. I don't know if that's the best analogy there, but it is a... I definitely understand that you don't want to have so few customers that they can dictate terms of your business. That is super risky, particularly if you need them, right? Like all of a sudden the incentive structure changes significantly. That is really cool. I love the fact that you want to stay with the the people that really need it, like the people that, I mean, businesses definitely need it, but smaller businesses that are just moving, trying to grow, trying to find their own footing, they also need it. And that you're still there for them is wonderful. And the fact that stands out to me the most here is that you're a small team and you want to stay small. That is very intentional. That's really cool. Is that, why is that? Like, what's the motivation behind staying like this? Is it because you like what you're doing and that's all you want? Like, because that's perfectly fine too. Or is there another motivation there?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Like, would we like to grow? Yes, we are trying. We're trying to figure this out. This is like the first time we've tried to like really figure out, and you're in the similar thing, sales and marketing. Like, we're trying to figure out how to like grow sustainably and intentionally, but within limits, right? Like, our goal, like, we just want to do more good in the world. Like, and like, money is a tool, right? And money is like freedom to do more of the things you want, right? So, you know, we're trying to figure out how to sort of like unlock that and like figure out growth in a way that still feels calm. I think I use, like, we, you know, I know people, so there's people that use the word like lifestyle business as, you know, a criticism.
Yeah,
right?
Derogatory.
But I think, yeah, it's not. And it's caused me pause over the years. Is like, is that what we are? Is that like what we're doing? And I think one of the reasons and sort of like the why, like the driving thing, is to be able like to create the life you want for yourselves. And that's not just like for me, but it's like everybody who works with us is like, how do we build a company that helps support the lives we want for ourselves, for our customers? And, you know, growing is part of like the vision of like, you know, being able to do more of that and like create better lives for ourselves. But at some point, growing too much or growing too fast or like doing these things like changes sort of your why, and like you leave that calm, right? Because there's something else, right? That, and that calm is a big part of, you know, and like having it be fun. Because I think you can be growing fast and it can be fun. And I think it can be calm and it can be fun. But if it's not fun, like, why do it? And I don't think I would have a lot of fun if it was like a super high stress thing, right? And like, I don't want a business keeping me up at night.
Yes. That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. That's not the work-life balance. It's like the work-sleep balance. So it's like, you know, like something that where you can compartmentalize it into, this is business, this is great, and this is an important part of my life, but it's not my life, right? It's not all there is. So I really appreciate you sharing this too. I think calmness as a term of how uneventful a normal day is in the life of a business, it's a pretty good indicator for, you know, where decisions should go. Like, does it keep the thing calm or does it make it more crazy? And I mean this just in the sense of like activity you don't want to do or things that you don't want to deal with. So it's nice to hear you share all of this. And I definitely appreciate you just sticking with something that you like and not just chasing money. I think the fact that you, first off, you have a discount, 25% discount for B Corps, like, or for
Corps. Nonprofit. We call it the Knowledge L, or KO for good discount. So originally it was nonprofits, but now it's nonprofits, B Corps, and other businesses doing good, like purpose-driven business.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love this. When I read purpose-driven business, I was like, yes, money is not a purpose. Money is a medium of exchange. That's what it is. Like, a profit-driven business is not necessarily a purpose-driven business. And the other way around, right? Now, you don't have to find purpose exclusively in profit. I mean, profit enables you to stronger impact your purpose if you want to, but it's not exclusively the same. Was that a choice from the beginning? Because that's really cool. I don't really see this much in software businesses.
Don't see it a lot of times in software business. So like, I didn't know exactly what to call it early on, but I was always attracted by businesses who were doing things a little bit different, right? Like that, you know, the idea of like an employee owned business, right? I've heard the idea, like a few times I'd heard stories of, you know, software companies that sell and then like split the funds amongst everyone that works there. I was like, wow, they didn't just take it for themselves. They actually gave it to everyone working there. So I'd heard these like inklings of these different businesses, and I didn't really hear too much of it in the software world, but I became aware of B Corps, right? Because it's very big in like the B2C community, right? Employee-owned businesses, B Corps, and like this idea of a triple bottom line business. So instead of like profit being the bottom line, it's, you know, profit, you know, people and planet, right? So you're looking at all things and you're seeing how like you impact on like the greater world. And that was like an attractive thing to me. So when I started, actually, at one point, like, we were just sort of floating around. It was like a very much lifestyle business. I sat down to be like, okay, what do I want in the future? Like, what do I want this to be? Like, what is my exit plan? Because you don't live forever. Your companies don't live forever. Like, how do you want to get out? And, you know, the thing that just was obvious to me is, like, I want to be an employee-owned business. Like, I want to be able to, like, sell the company, but I want to sell it to the people that are, like, working in the company so that then they can profit off the company too. And that they can use that to, like, build a good life for themselves. So, yeah. So I have this is my, like, big fat hairy goal, is to figure out how to become an employee-owned software company, which is not very common. But yeah, I think for me, the whole why and the whole, it's hard to say, like, exactly why, but I think it's the term I just recently learned was this idea of, like, people first. Right. And, like, businesses are just collections of people. It's like a thing we made up, right? We created businesses. We created money. We created, like, our economy. But it's all about people, and it's all about community and these relationships you build. So, like, the idea for me is really that being able to have, like, a business and own a business is, like, being able to create the life you want for yourself and other people, and, like, being able to experiment with that and not necessarily have to do things because, like, other people do them and other businesses do them, as you can structure things and build things in a way that you like, that you find meaning in, that you find purpose in, that you find fun. And I think it's solidified in these past few years, the type of business that we wanted to build. I just knew I wanted it to be different, and it wasn't just about money, but, like, figuring out what that thing is, I think, has really sort of, like, come into focus more recently. I'm like, yeah, I want to be a B Corp, which we just became B Corp in December. I want to be employee owned, not quite there yet. Still need to figure that piece out. But, like, that is sort of, like, the driving thing. It's like, how do we do this and then do more good in the world? Right. And, like, keep building a business that you want to work at and work with.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's so nice to see the passion in what you talk about right now. It's so cool. Like, this is such a founder thing too. Like, I can feel you. You just can't stop wanting this. It's really nice. And I love this. I love this. And I'm really looking forward to seeing this develop over time. Like, I know you're going to grow slowly, sustainably, and calmly into something bigger that facilitates this. So I cannot wait to see where this journey goes. And for everybody who's listening to this and actually wants to also follow you on that journey, where would you like them to go? Where would you like them to check out you, the business, and everything around it?
Yes. So I was off social media for like 10 years, but I recently got back on. So, like, I'm most active on LinkedIn. So you find me, Mary Beth Alexander. I'm also trying to figure out Instagram. It's a little weird for me, but, like, I'm the chief executive owl there. But, like, if you want to be my friend and help me figure out Instagram, that would be awesome. But our website is just knowledgeowl.com. We'd love to have you. We just redesigned our website for our ICP. So, like, it's now, like, a marketing website. So I'm really excited about our new website. So you can check us out there. I love chatting with folks. So feel free to reach out on any of these things. I'm just Mary Beth at knowledgeowl.com.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think, like, all of these places are worth a visit. Definitely your LinkedIn, like, just following you on your journey is super inspiring. Also, the website, marketing website for any founder out there, I think it's a really good website. I love, like, when I look at the landing page, I just want to tell you how great this landing page is, right? Let me just do this for a second.
The new one, because we just released it, like, last week.
Yeah, yeah. The new one that I refreshed earlier today to check.
Okay, yeah.
What I love about this is it doesn't lead with features. It doesn't lead with, like, technical implementation. It leads with the why, and it leads with the who this is for and who is using it. It's a lot of testimonials, a lot of this is why people want this. This is why people need this. I think you're selling the proverbial better life after the product with this marketing page really well. I think it's a very inspiring website. I think your pricing system is so simple. It's surprisingly awesome. Like, for something that is so simple, I think it's great. It's very inspiring. And I think I just have to hope the product, the website, it's really nice. I just want to tell you that because I think it's really
cool.
Thank
you. I'm excited. I mean, I can come back in a couple of months and tell you how the website performed.
I'm looking forward. I'd love to catch back up because this feels like a journey that I want to be really, like, listening close in. Like, I think it's going to be really, really fun for you. I am really appreciative of you sharing this, all of your knowledge with me today in a knowledge owl capacity. So it's really, really, really great. Thank you so much for all these insights into customer service and into what company you're building and what company you want to be building. Really appreciate that. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
And that's it for today. I will now briefly thank my sponsor, Acquire.com. Imagine this. You're a founder who's built a really solid SaaS product. You acquired all those customers and everything is generating really consistent monthly recurring revenue. That's the dream of every SaaS founder, right? Problem is, you're not growing for whatever reason. Maybe it's lack of skill or lack of focus or plain lack of interest. You don't know. You just feel stuck in your business with your business. What should you do? Well, the story that I would like to hear is that you buckled down, you reignited the fire, and you started working on the business, not just in the business. And all those things you did, like audience building and marketing and sales and outreach, they really helped you to go down this road, 6 months down the road, making all that money. You tripled your revenue and you have this hyper successful business. That is the dream. The reality, unfortunately, is not as simple as this. And the situation that you might find yourself in is looking different for every single founder who's facing this crossroad. This problem is common, but it looks different every time. But what doesn't look different every time is the story that here just ends up being one of inaction and stagnation, because the business becomes less and less valuable over time and then eventually completely worthless if you don't do anything. So if you find yourself here already at this point, or you think your story is likely headed down a similar road, I would consider a third option, and that is selling your business on acquire.com. Because you capitalizing on the value of your time today is a pretty smart move. It's certainly better than not doing anything. And acquire.com is free to list. They've helped hundreds of founders already. Just go check it out at try.acquire.com/Arvid, it's me, and see for yourself if this is the right option for you, your business at this time. You might just want to wait a bit and see if it works out half a year from now or a year from now. Just check it out. It's always good to be in the know. Thank you for listening to the Bootstrap Founder today. I really appreciate that. You can find me on Twitter at Arvid Kahl, A-R-V-I-D-K-A-H-L. And you find my books and my Twitter course there too. If you want to support me and this show, please subscribe to my YouTube channel. Get the podcast in your podcast player of choice, whatever that might be. Do let me know. It would be interesting to see. And leave a rating and a review by going to ratethispodcast.com/founder. It really makes a big difference if you show up there, because then this podcast shows up in other people's feeds. And that's, I think, where we all would like it to be, just helping other people learn and see and understand new things. Any of this will help the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and bye-bye.